Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Sonny Landreth is a master guitarist. He's released several highly acclaimed albums and performed with some of the best musicians around. So how did he go from playing for his dog in Lafayette to a brilliant career?
I wanted to figure out how to not sound awful. And, I realized that I have to learn something from everybody.
Follow Sonny Landreth's mentors to the very beginning, and you'll find Zydeco King, Clifton Chenier.
Especially in the studio and recording, you know, I would find myself, if I wasn't really sure about something, and I would go, well, what would Clifton do?
Sonny Landreth, after the break. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're at the studios of KRVS in Lafayette, Louisiana. The song we're hearing is called Wonder Ride, and it does a good job of describing the guy who's playing it. That's Sonny Landreth on slide guitar. And Sonny Landreth has what every musician on the planet wants. Work. Lots of work. From when he first picked up a guitar as a teenager here in Lafayette, he's been on a nearly seamless wonder ride around the world, playing with John Hiatt, Mark Knopfler, Jimmy Buffett, and so many others. In the meantime, Sonny Landreth has written and produced his own songs and released 11 albums. In 2008, his album titled From the Reach featured an embarrassment of talent, including Vince Gill, Dr. John, and the two Erics, Johnson and Clapton. Landreth kept his friends, but gave up the lyrics. He has an entirely instrumental album titled Elemental Journey. Thank you, and congratulations on Elemental Journey.
Well, thank you so much. You make it sound so glorious. I'm glad I've been, you know, showed that out. That's really cool.
Well, you are always on the move, it seems to me. I mean, can you just give the listeners an idea of how much sliding and moving you do?
Well, you know, we do about 100 shows a year, and that that's a lot of coming and going because in terms of getting to where the gigs are and the schedule and traveling and getting back home. But also, I hate to miss out on anything. So there'll be other projects that I, you know, like to do. And so, yeah, it keeps me going.
But, I really would love to have your frequent flyer miles, I have to say.
I finally got my million miler. I've got my little logo.
Do you really?
Did
you meet the captain? I mean, sorry, the pilot.
Yeah,
of
they didn't really do that.
No?
Not like in the movies. I was a little disappointed. But
they do it for George Clooney, but yeah, they're not doing it for Sonny Landreth.
I think that was more miles than I have even. So
well,
check
that
back
ain't
with
right.
me in another 10 years. And
a lot of your songs, like Wonder Ride, are songs that I call moving songs. You know, do you love the road?
Well, I do. You know, I have to be honest at this point. You feel the miles and the bumps more than when I was 20. But I still love playing the shows and meeting people. And, yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And the other thing, too, is that kinetic vibe about that. I think you're picking up on the songs. I've always had felt a connection to that.
Johnny Cash, in his autobiography, Cash on Cash, he said that after 30 years on the road, his one observation was that the only thing that's changed in 30 years is that now you can buy extra crispy chicken.
Eloquently put, I would say. us pulling the 5x8 trailer with the Bronco, and then we upgraded when I started taking my Toyota, you know, in addition to that. So it's a lot better than it used to be. But the one thing that I have to say, people and their the energy from the audience is really fantastic. And once upon a time, we were knocking on the doors and trying to get people to pay attention. So it's gotten a little spoiled in a way. When you walk out into the room and everyone there knows the songs and that's why they're there. But that really fires us up.
I can imagine. You know, other musicians have talked about, like, for instance, we interviewed Reggie Scanlon not long ago from the Radiators, you know, and he, you know, they've played, I don't know, almost 4,000 shows, I guess, over 30 years.
Oh, yeah, they're unbelievable. They never stopped.
They never stopped. Yeah. It's true. Until they stopped.
Until they finally stopped.
But he said that what changed for him in terms of observing, you know, looking out the window on these rides around the country was that the country had suddenly become more and more the same.
Yeah, there's a homogenization of that. And we also, not only here, but in other countries, unfortunately, and to
really?
Some degree. I can't say that, you know, I get, you know, teary-eyed when I see McDonald's in the middle of a Centrum of, you know, Bruges, Belgium or something. It's and that's kind of disturbing. Having said that, you know, there's something to being able to read the menu, but I would prefer to keep that with its the local culture, you know, intact, and that's a pretty big deal to me, really.
Well, sure. I mean, so much of the work that you do and the songs that you write are born of this area.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, just coming up from New Orleans, I mean, and listening to you as I'm driving up I-10, I guess, and looking at all these bodies of water, it's of a piece, you know?
Yeah, and it's the source. And I think there's a powerful theme there, too. And for songwriting, for me, it's also been a source to draw from. And you think about challenges and people and how they take that on. And grace in the face of adversity has always been something that inspired me too.
You know, going back, I don't know why, but we are going to talk about your other albums, but there's a song on Lovey Town that is just amazing, which is called Broken Hearted Road.
Mm-hmm.
And that might have something to do with living in the face of adversity, as you're describing it, you know?
Yeah, and that was a central theme for that album. There's actually that in the album before it with Outward Bound and South of I-10 and Into Levittown. I really drew a lot from local themes and characters in the area, in particular in Levittown. For love is long for the pilgrim on a broken-hearted road. It's pretty depressing if you take it apart out of context, you know. There's hope too, folks. We have hope on the other songs.
There is hope. That's definitely true. Have on Elemental Journey, you end on this very palpable sense of anticipation and hope with a song called Opening Sky. Mm. You know, what do you hear when you play that song?
Well, that's it, because a lot of that album, in a way, was a continuation with some of the other ideas thematically, but to express that instrumentally. Because then you think about, well, what happens without the lyrics? And so the instrumentation, in particular, the guitar becomes the lead voice. So that factored into it. And I wanted to end with an affirmation and a feeling of hope. And that was the idea with the Opening Sky.
The song is Opening Sky. We're talking with Sonny Landreth. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We want to hear from you. So visit us at WWNO.org and leave a comment or find us on Facebook. This week, we're at the studios of KRVS in Lafayette, Louisiana, and we're talking with Sonny Landreth. Now, listen, you, of course, were born in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
But you came to Louisiana at a young age, I want to say around nine, is that right?
Actually, seven. I'm seven years old.
Okay. Can you remember that move physically?
Oh, yeah. Oh, very much, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, I was excited because at the time, there was a popular television show, Jim Bowie.
Jim Bowie, Jim Bowie, he was a bold adventurous man.
That, I think that's how my parents sold me on it. Well, you know, we're moving to where Jim Bowie was born, as I was in after that.
Tell us about Jim Bowie.
I mean, he was a hero from, you know, from Louisiana. He wound up at the Alamo. I mean, he was one of the legends that died at the Alamo. And, of course, television, being as it is, exploited that to no end. And so for kids growing up. But, it, you know, really, it's the first time I even heard about Cajuns, and they tell me, well, where are you going? You're moving to where Cajuns live, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
And really, for me, what that ended up meaning in the long run was that we, in moving to Lafayette, Louisiana, there's such a strong sense of culture with all the people here, and with Cajun and Creole, and the music, and
sure.
The dance, the food, the whole bit. And I wouldn't have had that influence if we hadn't moved here. So I thank my father many times in the years following. It took a while, you know, but, well, but because of the music in particular. I mean, it was much of that.
But the thing is, you were coming from, is it Canton, Mississippi?
I was born in Canton, and then we moved to Jackson. We lived there for like 4 years, yeah.
Okay, and so then tell us, I mean, I moved slow, so tell us about that move. I mean, what do you remember as there, I mean, did you pile into a car?
Yeah, we had a car, and and in those days, before Interstate 10, you had two choices when you got to the border, you got to the Mississippi River. You could cross the old bridge in Baton Rouge. Or you could go the ferry in St. Francisville, the Feliciano. I'll never forget that. And the trick was to catch that thing before it took off, because then you were sitting there waiting in the dark until, you know, another hour or so. But that still was an adventure to me as a kid. I mean, it seemed epic in its day. And granted, the drive was much longer than it is now. But even as being young like that, that was very exciting.
Sure.
And I had a strong sense, too, even then, that we were going somewhere that was completely different than where we came from.
And so did you want to bring anything from Mississippi with you on that ride?
Just my dog. I wanted my dog. We can't leave Rex. I grew up with Rex. And so that was a good thing. We had our dog and our cat, and they lived very long. I literally grew up with him, and and that was, I think, as a kid too. Maybe boys more than girls. I don't know, but a dog is your best pal, and you know we went through everything together, and for better and for worse, and that included me learning to play slide guitar in the very beginning, which was.
Absolute for Rex.
Torture for Rex and the entire family.
Well, it's a testament of his love for you that he stuck around, you know?
We were gone. Once we went back to Mississippi to visit the family, and we left Rex with the vet at the time. There's only one in town, I think. And we were gone for a week, and when we came back home, he was waiting at the door at the house. He'd made a great escape. He'd been there I don't know how long, you know, and made his way all the way back home.
Sweet.
And, that was most impressive, yeah.
Indeed. Wow.
So that was the last time we left him. No.
Yeah, he needs to come with.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Is it just you? Do you have sisters and brothers?
Older brother Steve, and my older brother, and my mom and my dad. And the other thing, my brother Steve, he was interested in music, and he was always bringing music into the house and the early records, and that got me, exposed me to music and got me into it. And we started early on kind of entertaining the family and relatives with these little toy plastic Elvis guitars of the day. And our yowling was entertaining when we were kids, I guess, but that kind of left an impression. I kind of never got over it.
I always think it's important to have older siblings, I have to say, because they're the ones who really introduce you to the music you're going to fall in love with for the rest of your life, in a way.
He exposed me to guitar first, and he started playing trumpet, and I started playing trumpet.
Yeah.
That was my first instrument. And but I was 13 when I finally got the first guitar.
And so what kind of music were you listening to? Elvis?
Oh, yeah, Elvis. Scotty Moore's guitar player. I loved him.
Guitar traveling in the dark.
did your folks also embrace the music here?
They did. You know, it was another world here. And for one thing, I'd never heard Cajun French or any kind of other language. That never even occurred to me. My first day at school was very interesting. That was a bit of culture shock. But I fell in line pretty quick. And in that regard, I think it was a great childhood. The music, though, was something. You know, I don't think that I would have really encountered that, because even back then, there would be a store that would open, a Western Auto or some kind of store, a grocery store, and they put a flatbed trailer out in the parking lot, and a band would play.
That's right.
And on every Saturday, they had these locally produced TV shows where they'd have local bands be the host, and then they'd have other musicians come and sit in, and I'd watch all of that. Because by then I was really hungry to try to figure out how in the world to play the guitar. And so it was all magical to me. Anybody could pick that thing up and not, you know, sound awful was impressive to me. So
right.
I wanted to figure out how to not sound awful. And I realized that I have to learn something from everybody.
That's a good goal, how not to sound awful. Well, can you think of a song maybe within the Acadian tradition that you heard as a young person around that time, maybe from a flatbed truck or something really wanted to master?
Yeah, you know, I really couldn't zoom in on it back then, but as the years would go by, and then my friends that were involved directly, you know, and with the music, and it was part of their culture. That drew me in, and I began to play with friends, and we jam. And one thing with talking about slide guitar, and as I began to evolve with that, I realized that a Cajun waltz was a beautiful the sound, but also the phrasing worked really well with the finger style approach to guitar. So I could do something like
that. That'd be great. That's about as pretty as a shiny new dime.
thank you.
So what is does that tune have a name?
Actually, it comes from I was listening to playing with friends of mine and listening to how the melodies would work in the context of songs like Jolie Blanc. It's a classic Cajun song, and several others. And for me, it was a matter of finding my way around what the other players were, you know, what they were doing. Like, you have a fiddle, accordion, and T-fair, you know, playing the triangle, and the other guitar players. So it was a little bit of a trick to find a different voice that fit with all of that.
When I look into your eyes, they speak your heart. Say that you could have loved me and long much how it used to be. Come, shy, take hold my hand. I'd never let you go. It feels like my we'll be right back.
y'all don't mind, I'd like to take y'all for a ride about 2 hours up the interstate to Lafayette, Louisiana, to Sister City. Got a theme song called South of I-10. I woke up in Mississippi in 51. Migrated next door, became a native step son. I grew up on the rhythm of Clifton and Cleveland and the red hot Louisiana band. Rocking my baby through the 70th row in 81. I counted 30.
Touch the fret of your guitar when you play, you do it in almost in a delicate way. You know what I mean? You touch your fret almost the way that somebody else would touch fabric to say, is this silk?
I like that. You gotta be nice to your baby.
That's a good way of
putting
it.
She'll be nice back.
You gotta be nice to your baby. It's true.
Nobody puts baby in a corner, not even Sonny Landreth. Back in a minute. Stay right where you are. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. We're talking with a real musician's musician this week, the great Sonny Landreth. When he was a teenager, Sonny Landreth encountered what music lovers would describe as a trifecta of genius. In a single year, Landreth saw B.B. King,
Jimi Hendrix, and Clifton Chenier in concert. When he was old enough and good enough, Landreth played with Chenier, and theirs was a lifelong bond.
When I first heard Clifton Chenier, it blew my mind. I mean, I heard about this cat that played blues on accordion, and I just couldn't imagine that. You know, accordion to me was Lawrence Welk. Saw a friend of mine and out the door, he just, you know, invited us in.
Really?
Yeah, it was the Blue Angel Club, and I was probably 16, maybe. 16.
This is the first time you saw him?
First time I saw him, right. And I had, he saw us at the door, and he's something like, "Hey, Soul, come on in," and he sat us down, and that was the first time I felt brought into the Creole community. And then once you were with Clifton, well, you were then. And and when I heard him play, I was just transported. It was unbelievable. And I tell people that looking back now, it would probably be like if I had grown up in Chicago and Muddy Waters had taken me under his wing. It was that big a deal. So many years later, when I actually started playing with him, I had kind of grown up on his music in a way, and having that as a backdrop. So that was huge, and learning those rhythms with him and his band was incredible.
Yeah. I mean, that makes you kind of like a buddy guy type character in a way.
Well, I never
thought
of that. I like the analogy.
the buddy guy of Acadiana.
I'm going to tell Buddy that, tell him not to hold against me.
True blue. Your heart is a heavy and your head is a hanging down.
This is a song from The Road We're On album, and you have linked that song to Elmore James. Tell us about Elmore James.
Elmo was a big influence on me. He was had such a powerful sound in his voice and his guitar, and a classic slide guitar lick, and playing in the key of D.
Is that hard?
Well, it's not. It's more importantly, there's a certain vibe about it, and it's really the blues key to me. G
can
and D.
Can you show me?
Yeah, I can do it. I'll have to retune, but I can do it.
Okay.
And that's a good example of going back to, well, what did I take from and learn from my heroes? And speaking of the Delta blues was one aspect. Then getting into the electric blues, and especially with Elmore James. Thank you. The rough version. Sitting here for an hour, my hand's getting freezing cold.
Oh, no. May I tell you something about your face?
Sure, everybody else has.
No, the reason why is because you have a very interesting face. And when I look at it and I look at pictures, it reminds me of this of these comments that Steven Spielberg once made when he was casting Saving Private Ryan. Remember that movie?
Mm-hmm.
And he said he was looking particularly for actors who had faces, the faces of people who lived in the United States at the time of World War II. And you have the face of a person who could fit in any era. Like, I could see you in a portrait standing next to Abe Lincoln.
Wow, now there's a thought.
Exactly. And I can see you in a picture standing next to Clifton Chenier.
I like that.
So, ain't that something?
Whoa. Clifton and Lincoln. Man, you really... I appreciate this, Gwen. You're finding my demographic for me. We've been struggling for years in my career, and now I'm beginning to see the light.
Use my ideas.
There is hope.
Exactly. Well, so let me ask you this. I mean, there's something about blues music in particular, or Americana music, that makes you think of sort of a timelessness, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And which is a quality you have.
I'm glad you brought that up because actually, that's something that was always important to me, because my songwriting heroes wrote songs that, to me, stood the test of time. I mean, I figured out it's pretty easy to write a song. Can you write one that you'll actually still want to listen to a week later, not to mention a year later or 5 or 10 years later?
That's right.
And so that was something I would strive to do. And that's the trick. But I appreciate you saying it. I mean, for me, those are the kinds of albums that I still liked or listened to, or the musicians, or the kind of music. And really, it goes back to some of the early influences for me.
Well, I'm going down the roads and stopping Fannie Mae. Gonna tell her Fanny what I heard. Her boyfriend said, don't start me talking. I'll tell her everything I know. The sky's crying. Look at the tears roll down the street.
I got a trip to say, whoa.
When I have heard you speak about your influences, I've heard you talk about Sonny Boy Williamson, for instance, Elmore James, the Band, you know, Robbie Robertson, Paul Butterfield. And these are characters who are really in the bedrock of American music. How conscious of them are you when you pick up your guitar?
Well, I think that becomes second nature, too. But at one point, especially in the studio and recording, you know, I would find myself, if I wasn't really sure about something, and I would go, well, what would Clifton do?
Can you talk a little bit, I don't know if you remember this song you did. It's called Storm of Worry,
mm-hmm.
and you did it with Eric Clapton on the From the Reach album.
Mm-hmm.
And all. And you know, there's great guitar in this song, but it also, there's something atavistic about it. I mean, you really feel, as a listener, that you're listening to something that could be very old, you know, but you mm-hmm. definitely know that you're listening to something that's going to last, that's going to stand the test of time.
You know, there's a thing about that is, and it's hit me that way with the great records that I really liked listening to. You know, I can still put them on, and there's a freshness about it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still vital. And I think, in particular, with blues at the heart of it, we were talking about grace in the face of adversity earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a key theme. And I think because of that, it's it really goes beyond the actual language. It's more the communication is on an emotional level there, too. And it's something that speaks to people everywhere.
That's right.
I think that's part of that, you know, that gives it that lasting quality. And it still is something that it has impact.
Storm of worry, shake the family tree.
Storm of worry, what it brings home is the fact that you're always going to worry. I mean, that's part of life.
That comes with the territory.
Exactly. You know, nobody gets excused from that particular activity in life because I guess half of life is really trying to manage that anxiety, you know, whether
sure,
it's about a girl or—
Sure, and you have to have those that you turn back to and things you turn to that, I should say— And music has been that for me always, and that's how I get centered, and then hopefully to end up with a sense of wonder about it, and that's what music's done for me.
I tell you, we have reached the end of our time together, and I've had a ball. Thank you
so
much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
The great Sonny Landreth. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Jason Ryan, and Sean Collins. Special thanks this week go to Carl Fontenot at KRVS in Lafayette. Without Carl, who knows where we'd be? Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNO. You can hear this week's show and much more online at musicinsideout.org or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, Surf Song Realty of Orange Beach, Alabama, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNF. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax deductible thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information on how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.